Ladies and gentlemen, good day and welcome to the HDFC Life Insurance nine-month FY 2018 earnings conference call. As a reminder, all participant lines will be in the listen-only mode, and there will be an opportunity for you to ask questions after the presentation concludes. Should you need assistance during the conference call, please signal an operator by pressing star then zero on your touch-tone phone. Please note that this conference is being recorded. I now hand the conference over to Mr. Amitabh Chaudhry, CEO and MD of HDFC Life Insurance. Thank you, and over to you, sir.
Thanks, Jayo. Good evening, everyone, and welcome to the first results call of HDFC Life for the nine months ended December 31st, 2017. I have with me Vibha Padalkar, ED and CFO, Srinivasan Parthasarathy, appointed actuary, and Sonali Johri from Investor Relations. Let me first start by saying that I would like to begin by thanking each one of you for your trust and support in HDFC Life, which helped us complete our IPO successfully in November last year. Over the next few minutes, we'll share a brief commentary on our results, along with key developments and strategic focus areas for the company. The investor presentation, press release, and financials are available on the website of the stock exchange and our company. We would be happy to answer any queries post my opening remarks. I'll start with the business performance. The total new business premium for nine months this year increased by 33% versus last year to rupees 71 billion. Of this, our individual APE grew by 46% to rupees 31 billion, and group premium showcased strong growth of 22%. Our total premium during this period was rupees 146 billion compared to rupees 122 billion for the corresponding period last year, registering a growth of 20%. This comprised of strong new business growth, as mentioned earlier, along with a 9% growth in our renewal premium from rupees 69 billion to rupees 75 billion. In line with our consistent long-term strategy, also articulated at the time of our IPO, we continue to focus on driving balance across our businesses on how we sell and what we sell. On that score, we have worked on steadily increasing our distribution partners, and I'm pleased to share that we closed December 31st, 2017, with 139 bancassurance partnerships and 21 partnerships within non-traditional ecosystem, such as Jet Privilege, ET Money, Fairsend, and Oxygen, et cetera. This is an increase of 14 bancassurance partnerships and seven ecosystem partners during the quarter. Regarding our distribution mix, the bancassurance channel accounted for 32% of our total new business premium for the nine months, with a contribution of 6% by agency, 9% by direct, 2% by broker, and 51% by group. During the nine-month period, all our channels delivered healthy double-digit growth over last year and continue to be independently profitable based on post-overrun new business margins. We have also strived to maintain a balanced product mix, and our individual business APE for the nine-month period comprised 59% ULIPs, 27% participating, and 13% non-participating products. You would recall our ULIP percentage share was 50% year-to-date last year on account of lower contribution coming from bancassurance channel. As the channel has picked up pace this year, the ULIP share has also gone up but remains in the zone of 50% to 60%, as we have always indicated in the past. Our focus on growing the protection segment continued, and for the nine-month period, its contribution to individual new business APE increased to 5.2%, up from 4.8% in the previous year. Contribution of the protection segment to total new business received premium increased from 24.2% last year to  27.3% for 9 months this year. The new business sum assured increased by 28% to rupees 3.2 trillion from rupees 2.5 trillion last year, clearly demonstrating our focus on protection and mortality-driven business. The second pillar of our strategy has been around reimagining life insurance business, leveraging technology, and catering to continuously evolving customer preferences. In order to remain competitive while improving ease of customer onboarding and servicing, we have continued to, A, invest in innovation across business operations, which are reflected in the new business partnership tie-ups and new products being sold by the company. During the quarter, we launched Cardiac Care, a unique product providing for cardiac treatment covering multiple incidences of same illness. It also offers the option of income benefit on occurrence of a major cardiac illness. We also launched a group health product during the quarter, which is part of our continued effort at creating engagement across the 160 partners and their customers and creating more options for cross-sell. Lastly, on the product side, we recently got approval for a pension guarantee plan, which is a one-of-its-kind product that offers attractive guarantees today on annuity income that starts from a chosen retirement date in the future. This is the first-of-its-kind offering, as far as we are aware, in the insurance industry in India. Digitalization remains a key theme for us to migrate customers online, both directly and through deep integration with our distribution partners. These reflect in enhancements made to customer journeys on the mobile app, content management system that enables faster rollout of new business rules and information on the website, insurance account integrations for dematerialization of insurance policies, among other things. We are relentlessly pushing digitization across the value chain. We are one of the first companies in the sector to make massive strides to move to cloud with Data Lake up and running. This enables us to run real-time recommendation engines and making our digital efforts sharper, moving towards hyper-personalization. We continue to focus on mobility-driven solutions, which are augmented through asset-light operations, paperless customer journeys, straight-through processing, and mobile-enabled sales and service. During the nine-month period, we ensured 20.4 million lives versus 14.3 million lives last year, with 99.9% of our new business having been initiated through digital platforms. Our persistency ratio continues to trend strongly across various cohorts. While our 13-month persistency increased to 86% versus 83%, our 61st month persistency was at 53% compared to 60% last year. This reduction was primarily due to the impact of specific cohort of business written in financial year 13. Lastly, we strive to maintain profitable growth across each of our channels while working within a board-approved risk management framework. Some highlights of our 9 months financial 18 results are: our EV, embedded value as of December 31st, 2017, was ₹145 billion, a growth of 21.9% over EV at the end of fiscal 2017. The annualized operating return on EV for the nine-month period was 20.4% versus 18.4% for last year. We continue to maintain healthy post-overrun new business margin with 9 months at 22.2% versus 22% for last year. These margins are based on actual expenses incurred during the nine-month period. A dividend of ₹3.3 billion, ₹1.36 per share, was paid during the quarter ended 31st December 2017. Our OPEX to total premium ratio was 14.2%, which reflects on one side continued investment in growth opportunities along with seasonality in our business. Our profit after tax for 9 months financial year 2018 was $7.6 billion, which is a growth of 18% over last year. We generated annualized ROE of 24.9% compared to 25.7% last year. Solvency continues to be strong at 191% post the dividend paid during the quarter. We are amongst the leading fund managers in India with AUM over ₹1 trillion. Our AUM increased by 26.5% versus 31st December 2016 AUM. We continue to maintain a steady debt equity mix of 57:43. Very quickly, I would like to highlight the performance of the two wholly owned subsidiaries. HDFC Pension Management Company has now become the largest private-owned pension management company in India with an AUM of ₹20.3 billion at the end of December 2017, which reflects a growth of 74% since March 2017. The second subsidiary, HDFC International Life and Re Company, based out of UAE, commenced the reinsurance operations in January 2016. Company collected gross revenue of $1.1 million in the current financial year and continues to explore untapped niche growth opportunities. To summarize, we continue to harness the long-term growth potential of the sector with specific focus on protection. We had a robust quarter and continue to deliver a consistent performance across all our metrics. Our new business margin was about 22%. Our EVOP, return on EVOP, was about 20%. Return on equity was close to 25%. Our persistency matrix reached 86% in the nine-month period. Our balanced product mix, diversified distribution network, and customer-centric approach has helped deliver profitable growth and shareholder value. In line with our stated strategy, we will continue to work hard and out-invest competition in leveraging technology and reimagining the life insurance business. Thank you, and we are now happy to take any questions that you may have.
Sure, thank you very much. We will now begin with the question and answer session. Participants who wish to ask questions may press star and one on your touchtone telephone. If you wish to remove yourself from the question queue, you may press star and two. Participants are requested to use handsets while asking questions. Ladies and gentlemen, we will wait for a moment while the question queue assembles. We have the first question from the line of Manish Oswal from Nirmal Bang. Please go ahead.
Yes, sir. Thank you for the opportunity. I have a question on the overall operating expense ratio trend over the FY17 to FY18, 9M FY18. So percentage increase both the commission and the other total operating expenses. So could you highlight what is the sustainable levels for the same? And second question on the how is the pricing environment in the, especially the protection business? Because we see a lot of competition coming in that segment. Could you highlight something on that?
So as far as expense ratio is concerned, as we have said, it is very, very important for us to continue to outspend competition on leveraging technology and reimagining reinsurance business. Our Credit Protect business grew at the rate of 57% in the first 9 months. And as that business grows at that pace, our expenses will reflect growth because we continue to support our partners in various ways and obviously driving this kind of growth. As over a period of time, and I can't predict what that time period is, as over a period of time the Credit Protect growth slows down, I do expect our expense ratios to stabilize and then start trending downwards from there. You asked the competition on the protection segment. Yes, you're absolutely right. We have taken the space away from competition and we have been ahead of the market for a long period of time. It is not unexpected that the competition will try to obviously gain space as they realize that they missed the opportunity. We have been preparing for this for the longest period of time. So yes, we might see some pricing pressure. We might see places where they might come in and replace us. But what we have seen in at least the last 9 months, we have not lost any relationship. It is reflected in the kind of growth we have seen in our CP business and the protection business for the 9 months. We believe that the growth opportunities continue to exist out there. We believe that we have created a technology platform which definitely differentiates us. We believe we have created a whole ecosystem around how some of the customers which are signing up for these policies can be upsold new insurance policies going forward in the future. So we believe we have a strong competitive positioning which will allow us to continue to deliver on this kind of protection numbers going forward in the future also.
And last question on the persistency ratio, 61-month persistency ratio has seen a decline from 57% FY17 to 53%. So any specific reason for the same?
So as I mentioned to you that, you know, there is a specific cohort of policies which we sold in 2013 which is working its way through. Our persistency numbers, if you look at 13-month, in 2014-15 has also dipped because, you know, if your 13 month is low, you know, when it works its way through the 61st month, it will continue to kind of, you know, showcase through each of the persistency cohorts. But if you look at the persistency numbers across 25th or 37th, you will see our numbers have gone up. So we are, you know, the business which you have written post-2013 continues to show very positive momentum in terms of our persistency numbers.
Okay, sir. Thank you very much. All the best.
Thank you.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Prakash Kapadia from Honeywell Portfolio Management. Please go ahead.
Yeah, thanks for the opportunity. Congrats on a good set of numbers. So given, you know, higher ULIP share in our business mix, which is typically a lower margin product, VNB margins have still, you know, improved for us in the 9 months. If you could give some color on that, that would be helpful.
Well, I think, you know, we have always stated that one of our strategies has been to build a balanced business. And as you rightly pointed out, while our share of ULIP has gone from 50 to 59 and the profitability of ULIP products is definitely lower than some of the other product categories, we have been able to compensate for a lower margin on some of these additional growth we have got by continuing to grow our, for example, the protection business on both the individual and the group side. So, you know, this balance allows us to continue to deliver these margins on a consistent basis. We have said that our ULIP share of ULIP in the individual business will continue to sink from 50 to 60%. It is close to 60% right now. We are trying to work very hard to ensure if we can bring this down to a more meaningful level. I mean, obviously, we'll see what happens in the January to March quarter. But at the same time, we do not want to stop our consumers from buying ULIP if that's, that's the product they want to buy from us. So we are working very hard in terms of reducing the ULIP share, but at the same time, the balance in our business across various channels and across various products allows us to continue to deliver this margin. We obviously remain confident that, you know, this kind of margin is sustainable going forward in the future.
And secondly, sir, there have been recent, you know, guidelines by IRDA for reduction in surrender charges on traditional, you know, par and non-par products. So any thoughts on that, any impact which we feel on our business, what are we trying to, you know, mitigate that, if you would give us some.
So actually, the what you're quoting is the product committee recommendations. I was the chairman of the product committee, so I can say I was the author of some of the recommendations which have been made. Well, you know, we have to listen to what the... you know, the regulator is asking the industry to do, and the regulator is saying that in the traditional products, it is very, very important that the consumers get some kind of return after they have made a couple of premium payments. As if, I don't know what the regulator will do, because right now they are seeking industry feedback and they are having internal discussions and over what time period some of these recommendations will be implemented. We believe that these recommendations are the right thing for the customer, and whatever is right for the customer over a period of time will result in you know, more sales, more people buying some of the traditional products. You know, I think, you know, we have done a, in that product committee report, we also done a comparison of how these surrender charges work for unit-linked products and how they work for the traditional products. So from that perspective, I do believe regulator will do something. What the impact on our overall numbers will be, we keep saying the same thing. There is enough balance in our business where if this was to happen, we will be able to manage some of the changes the regulator might bring about. Please understand that if we were all, I mean, ultimately, what are we recommending? We are saying that only if the policies are lapsed that a certain surrender payment should be made. Strategy very immediately that should come through here is that we will work very hard to ensure that the no lapsation occurs anyway in the first place. So I think industry will get the time, and I think some of the larger players who are very focused on getting persistency right, and you know, I just quoted our persistency numbers, that we can very easily manage this issue as and when it comes, because we believe firstly it will lead to higher sales, secondly we'll work even harder to ensure that the lapsation reduces even further.
Understood. And typically, sir, Q4 is a stronger quarter for us, and given, you know, whatever we've seen on the individual AP side of, you know, 46% kind of growth in 9 months, and as you said, you know, customers are demanding ULIP currently, so what kind of, you know, trends and growth we foresee in the near future, specifically on ULIP?
So I can't talk about the what growth we expect in the current quarter, because that'll not be correct. But what I can definitely say is that our ULIP, we had a muted quarter last year, and so some of the sales numbers which are coming through also reflect the fact that, you know, we are coming from a low base.
Right.
Our fourth quarter numbers last year were decent, and obviously from that perspective, you know, what numbers we'll end up with, we need to see. But we are working hard, as I said, to ensure that the balance in the product mix is maintained. And we believe that we can definitely bring the ULIP percentage down from where it is today. But there's still 2.5 months left, and very difficult to predict at this stage what we'll end up with.
And we would always, you know, try and maintain around 50% kind of ULIP share. We would work towards that.
So we have said we'll swing between the zone of 50 to 60. 50. So I would say average is 55. So 55. We'll try to remain there.
Understood. Thank you. All the best.
Thank you.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Parag Zariwala from White Oak Capital. Please go ahead.
Thanks. Congrats on great listing and strong numbers. One thing is that, you know, if I look at our RHP, 6 months margins were 22.4, and now it has slightly come down to 22.2. So is it mainly because of ULIP doing much better in last 3 months?
Hi, this is Vibha here. Yeah, I think, you know, when we look at quarter on quarter, these minor swings and seasonality will be there. But I think we've consistently maintained these levels of both new business post overrun as well as return on embedded value, and no reason to believe that we will not continue to maintain. So yeah, slight, you know, just to bring home a point is that all our numbers in there and margins are based on actual numbers and not on full year estimates. And so when we mark to market based on actuals, some of the seasonality does kick in. And plus, of course, like you mentioned, the product mix and the fact that we are running slightly higher on UL than we have traditionally or what we have done last year.
Yeah, so no, my you know, main purpose of asking this question was that basically the it's only because of the mix has changed, right? I mean, we haven't seen any great pressure so far as the pricing is concerned in any of the segment.
We don't believe that, yeah, I think just to answer, yes, I think it's more the mix more than anything else.
You know, let me just, you know, say some, add something here. I mean, obviously, products which are profitable, we should expect, you know, pricing pressure. And as a management team, we should be planning for it in advance. And that's exactly what we've been doing for the last couple of years. So wherever the pricing pressure is, you have some other levers to ensure that you can either manage the margins or you get the scale benefit so that you can continue to deliver the margins which you're delivering in the past. So that's why, you know, that's where the confidence stems from, that we don't see some of these things which might be happening in the marketplace is going to impact our overall performance as we move forward.
Okay. And can we have some kind of guidance in terms of growth outlook or a margin outlook for F19 or, you know, going for, let's say, in a slightly in a broader way also for next 2-3 years?
Well, you know, when we did our IPO, we were saying that it is our endeavor, and we can't guarantee it. It is our endeavor to maintain certain metrics at a certain level. And I mentioned that in my opening remarks too, that our endeavor would be to maintain margins above 22%, maintain EVOP above 20%, get the ROE to close to 25%, continue to boom the persistency numbers up, keep the solvency margin between 180 to 200% and not keep excess capital with us. So I think we have mentioned some of those facts pretty consistently, and I think we'll like to operate within that framework. Obviously, if the numbers are better than those, we'll be declaring those numbers if the performance reflects that. So otherwise, that's kind of the framework we're trying to work under.
Okay. Thanks and all the best.
Thank you.
The next question is from the line of Adarsh Parasampuria from Nomura Securities. Please go ahead.
Hello. Yeah, thanks for the opportunity. I just wanted to check if you can give the absolute numbers for 9 months vis-a-vis last year for the individual protection, the pure protect business and the credit protect.
So you want the exact number, Adarsh? Is that what you're looking for?
Yeah, broadly the mix or if
so,
you...
Okay, so we can give you the exact numbers on credit protect. Last year we did 1120 crores in the last 9 months. This 9 months we have done 1756 crores to be precise.
Yeah.
If you look at the protection business on the individual side, we did 101 last year. It is 159 on just protection. If you add some of the, you know, the health side, then the number is 134 and 178.
Okay.
Sorry, 188. My apologies. Okay.
And these are all 9 month numbers. Yeah?
These are all 9 month numbers.
Perfect. So just wanted to understand, you know, your credit protect business. What are the attachment rates, right, for mortgages in the HDFC group now, or when you do CVs with Chola? Where can it go? Because the last 3-4 years of very high growth, or from almost no business in credit protect, you know, we would have reached decent attachment levels in various segments. So where are we now, and where do you expect that to go?
So I can't comment on individual attachment rates. Let me just say that they are not maximized at all at this stage first. So, you know, the growth can come from three possible areas. One is that you obviously add more relationships and they can drive completely new business growth for you. Second is that within an existing relationship, you can drive growth in two ways. One is that you attach to more loans, and second is you attach to the maximum amount that is possible. Please understand that not in every loan, if someone has taken a mortgage of 100 rupees, they sell a protection policy of 100 rupees. It could be 50, it could be 60. So the value penetration can be driven from both perspectives. And we believe that And by the way, the third area of growth is that if HDFC Limited itself, for example, continues to grow at 15-20% per annum, that growth you'll get anyway, at the same attachment rate, at the same value penetration. So we believe that there is still scope for growth, but yes, most of the large NBFCs and banks are spoken for, and you know, the number, some of the new relationships that are being signed are for some of the smaller relationships, or in some cases they are large relationships. We are replacing an existing partner. So I don't want to predict or comment on what the growth could be, but we believe that the opportunity continues to be to remain large, and we are a very, very large player in this business, and we have continued to add new relationships, as is evident in the numbers which I just quoted in the opening remarks.
And so last question on this one, from my side is on some of these relationships, are they exclusive or they could be selling some of these products for two insurers or?
So we had mentioned in our, at the time when we were doing the IPO, that when we had 125 relationships, there were only 30 which were exclusive. Balance, we had existing relationships. I mean, they had relationships with other partners also. So no, they are not all exclusive. A lot of the relationships have more than one partner. And, we might have in some cases much higher share than some of the others. In some cases, we might have a slightly lower share because maybe we started late in that particular relationship. So no, the number of exclusive relationships are not very high.
And because you kind of done this product so well, right? Are people really, are wherever you, it's not exclusive. Are some other banks wanting to undercut? Is that something that you're seeing?
I mean, as you would expect, when people see an opportunity or a market which you have created, others would like to follow and obviously try to do predatory pricing. We are seeing that behavior, of course. And as I've been saying repeatedly, we have been preparing ourselves for this eventuality for the longest period of time. So we have tried to create differentiation across multiple dimensions. We are trying to add value in terms of technology. We are trying to add value in terms of some of the value penetration things which I talked about. We are trying to add value in terms of trying to upsell some other products to these particular customers who are right now taking a protection policy against a loan. So there are various things which are trying to do with these partnerships to ensure that we add value beyond a simple Credit Protect product. It's a journey, and we are on that journey. We believe that our relationships across the board are extremely strong, which stems from the brand, which stems from the kind of work which we have done with these partners over the last couple of years. And at least in this quarter, I'm not aware of a single relationship which we have lost in spite of some of the predatory pricing which might be happening in the marketplace.
Perfect. Thanks a lot for your answers.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Rahul Marathe from Akash Ganga Investments. Please go ahead.
Hello.
Yes, Akash. Sorry.
Congratulations on good set of numbers. I would like to ask, in the 9 months, 9 months FY17 and 9 months FY18, our new business premium growth was 33% and the renewals premium growth was 9%. So do we expect this kind of growth going ahead?
So the renewal premium growth reflects the kind of, in many ways reflects the growth which we had last year. Our growth in the overall premium numbers was quite muted last year because the bank insurance channel did not grow. This year we are growing at a much rapid pace, and that will flow through, should flow through in the renewal premium growth next year because, you will have more money to collect.
Yes.
So renewal premium is in a way reflective of how we have done in the past, and as if our performance continues with a high growth rate, then the renewal premium will also gradually slowly start reflecting those kind of growth rates going forward in the future.
Yes. And my second question is, our embedded value grew by approximately 1,500 crores in H1 FY18, and in Q3, it grew by around 400 crores. So do we expect such kind of growth in our embedded value also?
So if you look at our growth in embedded value for this particular quarter, it is 800 crores. The reason why the number looks low is because we have declared a dividend also, and that's why our net increase in embedded value is 450 crores odd. So yes, the pace of addition to the embedded value continues as we have seen in the first 6 months. Please also understand that in the first 6 months, we had a little bit of uplift in our embedded value because during the IPO process, as independent actuaries were going through our numbers, they asked us to increase our embedded value a little bit because maybe we were too conservative. So our growth in the embedded value continues at a pretty decent pace.
Okay, sir. And just one last question about the growth of business.
Yes. Certainly. Are you talking about what growth of the business in the future? Well, we can't comment on that, but you know, we believe the insurance opportunity in India remains large and it remains untapped, and we are uniquely positioned to capitalize on this opportunity as we move forward. So we have only made one statement, that we believe that we can grow at a rate faster than the industry, and we continue to maintain that as we move forward. Very difficult to predict what will happen this quarter or the next quarter, but we are hoping that, you know, obviously the industry is quite well positioned to grow at a decent pace going forward in the future.
Okay. Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Avinash Singh from SBI Cap Securities. Please go ahead.
Yeah, hello.
Hi, Avinash.
Hi.
Avinash, we can barely hear you. If you could speak a little louder.
Yeah, can you hear me now?
Yes, very well.
Yeah. So my question is particularly regarding to your underwriting profit. The new business strain, of course, the growth in new business volume is one part that you're explaining. But if I just look at that new business strain as a percentage of, say, APE, it seems quite high in the first 9 months of this year. I mean, so what other factors, I mean, mix or any other cost that explains that very high new business strain?
I didn't actually expect a question like this from you. Yeah, please go ahead.
Yeah, Avinash, exactly what you said, the reason for the strain is because of the product mix, and given that we have sold a lot more of unit-linked products, so this year it has been 80%, and typically we have been in the zone of, like Amitabh said, between 50 to 60%, so unit-linked does have a strain, as you know, and that is what is causing, and if we were to continue on our journey to higher levels of persistency, this should unwind and result in Indian GAAP profits. As you know, Indian GAAP profits, there is no straight lining, and so all of that, as we incur the expenses, would hit us as a strain right now. Also, there is the fact that when you look at our expenses itself, the fixed costs are actually coming down, but it is investment into business, into all the growth areas, into technology, into a whole host of things that we're doing on digital mobility, etc., which you'd find on our investor presentation. All of that is hitting. So it is a combination of the product mix along with some of the investments in terms of big bets for the future that we continue to invest at any point in time.
Okay. And what sort of a typical premium paying terms of your new ULIPs where you are seeing most of the growth coming?
In terms of premium paying term, it is typically about a 10-year kind of horizon.
We have shown the numbers in our presentation. There is a slide number 18, Avinash, where we have shown the general movement of average policy terms and average customer age. We are not, you will see both on the UL Life and on the, there is a small change, not too much of a change, from 12 years has gone to 11 years, but I have not read it as a trend at all.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Dhaval Gada from Sundaram Mutual Fund. Please go ahead.
Hi, Amitabh, Vibha. Congratulations on good results. Just a couple of questions. First, on slide 6 of the presentation, you've shared details on the cross-sell ratio to group customers. Just wanted to understand typically what products do these customers consume, and what is the kind of ticket size we look at? And also, do you have a target in mind over the next 3 to 5 years? What kind of cross-sell ratio do you want to achieve?
So, obviously the kind of customers and the kind of products you sell to them depends on the how we are, what is the profile of the customers, where these leads are coming from. So please understand the way the model works is that we have a certain set of customers who are buying Credit Protect, and on those set of customers, based on the relationship which we have with our bank insurance partners and the understanding we have with them, we try to create upsell leads. And based again on the profile of that particular customer, we'll try to sell a particular set of product. Very difficult to kind of, give you a very generic answer in terms of this profile, that product. It's based on the relationship and the kind of lead which we get and which part of the country we get the lead from. As far as the overall target is concerned, please understand that we are working very hard first to create a technology-driven channel which will allow us to capitalize on these leads in a very, very different way. So I would not like to venture into kind of giving a target at this point in time, but we, if you look at the number of lives we're insuring, we see this as a huge opportunity for us in terms of developing a very different channel, and that's what we are focused on at this stage.
Just one follow-up on that. I would assume that, you know, in some cases, like, for example, if it's a Chola customer, maybe the ticket size of loan that he's consuming would be lower than a mortgage. Average ticket size of the cross-sell lower than the company average? Just some color around, you know, how profitable the segment can be over a period of time, just some color.
No, so the, we have done some analysis, not very detailed analysis, because numbers are there, but, you know, we need to see more numbers from here. The average ticket size is very similar to what we are seeing in the company itself. The profitability of this channel, or, you know, whatever we are generating through this, and these leads are being passed on to various channels. Right now there is no independent channel, but the profitability of these leads is very similar to what we record as a company itself. As we get scale, and as we are able to use technology more innovatively, it is possible to obviously reduce the expenses we are incurring in generating, you know, insurance business for this channel, and then we'll see over a period of time whether it can give us better profitability.
Sure. Second, what is the kind of attachment rates for riders currently, and what kind of opportunity do you see over the next few, maybe 5 years from now? How that can improve overall, sort of one more lever to profitability?
So yes, I mean, you know, riders are decently profitable, and we have been focused on that segment for some time, as well as can we attach riders also to our both individual and group policies. It's part of the overall process and the way we sell and the sales management process we have in the company. We don't want to kind of start sharing numbers or too many numbers on that at this point in time.
Sure. And just lastly, on the risk of, you know, higher corporate tax rate, what is the industry recommending to the regulator or government in order to manage the risk? I mean, any comments there?
We are not aware of any ask being made by the finance ministry, anyone there, as to what the views of the insurance industry are. Based on the limited conversations we have had with the ministry and with the regulator, it appears that while the change can happen very easily, the change might not be in the offing. We have obviously disclosed to you the sensitivity of our numbers if the change in the overall tax rate was to happen for the insurance industry. I think people tend to understate or underestimate the benefit also we'll get, because there is a taxation of policyholder funds for the traditional business, and that should also go away. Right now, the numbers that you've given from a sensitivity analysis perspective assume no benefit coming through, just a pure change in terms of just the tax and what the impact overall would be. We believe that over a period of time, this could be something which could happen, and we have to, as a company, get prepared for it going forward in the future.
Sure. Thank you, and wish you all the very best.
Thank you, Dhaval.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Nishin Chawate from Kotak Securities.
Yeah, hi, Amitabh. Hi, Vibha.
Hi.
So my question pertains to the agency channel. You have around 71,000 agents currently, which is, I guess, a, you know, fairly strong ramp up over the last 9 months. So maybe if you could give some guidance as to, you know, where do we see this number going forward, and you know, any strategy backing that.
So, Nishin, if you recall, in our RFP document and even in the through the IPO process, we said that agency is a big bet for us, and we're going to invest in this business going forward. So just to give you some color, the agency business degrew in the first quarter, grew by 25% in the second quarter, and grew by 42% in the third quarter. You know, please understand, the third quarter tends to be good also because of the MDRT and all the things around it. But yes, this is the area of investment for us, and the investment is, you know, is reflecting in the number of new agents we have signed up, is reflecting in the kind of growth we are seeing in the business. We will continue to invest in this business till we get it to a much larger size than what it is today. Again, I would not venture into giving a kind of a outlook number, but we have very openly and clearly stated this is an area of investment for us. And we will continue to invest in this business as we go forward.
And will this kind of in the short term lead to a maybe slightly new business strain or something?
Well, you know, the share of ULIP in this business is much lower. Actually, they do much more protection business. But yes, obviously, as we invest, it will cause a little bit of strain, which, again, I come back to our statement that because of our balance, we believe we can manage investment and continue to deliver on some of the numbers which you have talked about.
Sure. Just one small question, and this is on the dividend policy. Now that you are listed, you know, what could the policy be like? Would you be declaring dividend in the third and fourth quarter or every quarter or annually?
Well, you know, for historical reasons, we have been declaring the dividend in the third quarter. And now kind of, you know, our promoters and I guess shareholders have got used to it. This is something which we intend to discuss with the board over a period of time and see whether we need to change it at all. Right now, there is no change in the policy, and that's why we continue with the dividend in the third quarter, which is in December. If there is a change and if the board approves a policy which is different, we'll definitely come back to everyone and say this is the change in the policy. Right now, this has not been discussed in detail with the board because, you know, we'll do that maybe in the coming quarter or the quarter after that.
Sure. Great. Thank you very much and all the best.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Nitin Agarwal from Motilal Oswal Securities. Please go ahead.
Hi, congratulations on great set of numbers. So my first question is, the banker distribution is still skewed towards the group, even as we have formed a large number of banker tie-ups. So what sort of diversification would we be looking for in this particular channel?
So, you know, as we have pointed out before, that you're absolutely right that right now the lot of the bank insurance partnerships we have signed are the business which is generating from them is coming through the group platform. It is not an easy proposition to take a customer who has taken a loan from a bank insurance partner to now say that, okay, by the way, why don't you buy an insurance policy? We have had very good success to start with, but for it to scale to a completely different level will take time. What we have said that this is an opportunity. We have been the first ones to spot this cross-sell opportunity and will continue to work towards increasing the size of this channel. As and we make progress, we'll obviously keep updating you on the same.
And how do you assess the strength of the banker channel? Is it like on the basis of the loan market share of these tie-ups, or is it on the basis of number of loans, customers? So what is the right metric that you look at to evaluate?
So when we go and evaluate any bank insurance partnership of this kind, we obviously look at what kind of loan disbursements they are talking about across various cohorts of loans. Because, you know, the protection premium we can earn on a two-wheeler will be much lower than what you can say earn on a mortgage loan, because the tenor of the loans tend to be different, the size of the loans tend to be different. And based on that, we sit down with the partner, look at what the penetration levels are, and work on a plan on what could be possible going forward in the future. So, again, the size and the growth of the relationship depends on that particular bank insurance partner, which is obviously discussed on a regular basis. And we tend to take it from there. I, you know, wish I could give you a more precise answer, but it depends on every bank insurance partner.
Right. No. fine. And secondly, on the agency side, though we have been adding agents very aggressively, and but in terms of business mix, the it is still on a decline. So where would you see this heading to in next couple of years? The business mix coming out of the agency channel.
So we do want to grow the agency channel from where it is today, and definitely over a period of time which is undefined at this stage, like to increase to double the level where it is today. But as I said, it is a journey. We are very clear in our minds, and we have the board support on that we would like to invest in this channel heavily and try to grow to a size which a company of agency life, kind of agency life should have. So we'll obviously continue to invest in this channel. We have made a beginning this year, but it's a journey, and we'll take a, you know, we have to be very, very, we have worked very hard to ensure that the profitability of agency channel is where it is today. We don't, for the sake of growth, want to sacrifice all the good things we have done in the agency channel. So while we'll continue to invest, we want to ensure that we are calibrating the growth in a way so that all the good things we are doing and the profitability we have in the channel is not hampered in any form or shape. So, but our intention over a period of time is to get to double the number where we are today.
Thanks so much, sir. Good luck and all the best.
Thank you.
Thank you. Before we take the next question, we'd like to inform participants that in order to ensure that the management is able to address questions from all participants in the conference, please limit your questions to one per participant. We take the next question from the line of Harshit Toshniwal from Jefferies. Please go ahead.
Hi, sir. Congratulations on good listing and good numbers. Couple of questions. So, first on this credit product, specifically in this product, just want to know that what are the sensitivity of our margins with respect to mortality? So, for this specific credit product which we are selling, even broad numbers would be helpful.
Well, let me just state this, that at HDFC Life, we monitor the mortality risk at the minutest level, and it is monitored at very senior levels in the organization. At a very macro level, I can just say that our overall mortality which we are seeing in this portfolio is better than what we expected. I'm just saying, I'm giving it a macro level.
Right.
And we obviously continue to monitor it, we'll continue to monitor it as we move forward. Let me just stop there. I don't want to say more than this.
Okay, and if I can slip in one more question. So, on the surrender profits, so the new regulation which is coming on the traditional products, so just want to know that currently of our non-par and participating savings product, what would be a ballpark number of the surrender profits? Any guesses? So the margin ranges between 10 to 20% depending on the nature of product. But if I need to quantify it, that how much of it would surrender, then how can we do that?
Yes, so you mentioned non-par, etc. So just backtracking, UL, of course, there's nothing now. So that's a long story. We are not really explicitly, it's all part of the pool of charges that we get, especially in the participating pool, and surrender is one element. You could have very robust mortality, you could have various other kind of charges that come in. So just picking up one set of charges is something that is not, that really... it would not be giving the full story, and it's all baked in anyway into our consistent post-over and new business margin.
Yeah, because the reason I am asking is that persistency for 6 months is around 55% after the 5 or 6 years. So around 50% surrender during the period only. So that's why I want to know that this must be a large number. Anyways, it's okay, sir.
Yeah, that is because our product itself is a 5-pay product, unlike a lot of other companies in the industry which sell long tenured non-par products.
Hmm.
We are conservative and we don't really sell very long tenures. We restrict our premium paying term to 5 years. That's why it actually falls off, because the policy itself is done with it.
Okay. Thanks a lot, ma'am. Thanks a lot.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Rupesh Tatia, who's an individual investor. Please go ahead.
Hello, sir. Thank you for the opportunity. My question, I have been looking at L42 forms of, let's say, ICICI, SBI, LIC, and I see that for same products, especially the inflation and the discount rate assumptions are very, very different. So could you tell us why, could you give us your thoughts on why that is? And then how that is related to, let's say, movement in embedded value?
I can only talk for HDFC Life. I don't know about competition's numbers. In fact, which Amitabh alluded to earlier in the call, we had to put through some change at the start of the year during the external peer review. One of the assumptions was with regard to inflation. We were very conservative. We had a very high number. In fact, our inflation assumption was slightly higher than the interest rate itself. So it was so conservative, and therefore the external actuarial review recommended that we bring down the inflation assumptions. So it is brought down, but still we believe it's more conservative than what it should be. And the interest rates that we use are the risk-free rates, which are calibrated to the assets that we hold. And these have been reviewed by the external actuarial work. And we think these are the appropriate and reasonable rates to be had in assumptions.
Just to add that, when you read that in conjunction with the sensitivity analysis, you will see that we aren't very sensitive to interest rate movements, and just again reiterating, the conservatism built into our assumptions.
So just to follow up on interest rate, right? I mean, there have been real-world examples of interest rates, let's say, going to 0% or 15%. For example, Japan and US, they went to zero or even negative. And in Greece, for example, they went to 15%. So how do you like look at these kind of scenarios, and how do you like, what is your risk frameworks for these kind of scenarios?
So I'm not sure whether you've seen our sensitivity analysis that was disclosed in our prospectus and also now into our presentation. So if you look at the movement in reference rates, you'll see that, well, I won't run through all the numbers and we can take this offline, you'll see that it isn't very impactful. And, you know, the impact that you're talking about possibly could be if we have a very aggressive pricing on our non-par savings product, and also, like I mentioned earlier, very long-term premium paying term on the on some of these products. That's something that could bite us, and more so if it's a completely unhedged position. Without giving too much in terms of our strategy, our portfolio is completely hedged. So don't really see that happening in terms of what we have seen in some of the other parts of Southeast Asia.
Okay, okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Vishal Rampuria from HDFC Securities. Please go ahead.
Hello. Hi.
Hi, Vishal.
So one question I have is that within group credit business, how much will be home loan, how much will be non-home loan?
You know, while we are not really giving that level of detail in terms of various sub-segments, etc., I think it suffice to say that we have been able to build a very significant business that is other than home loan. It started off as largely home loan, Amitabh mentioned, but we've been able to venture into several other sub-segments of vehicle, tractor, two-wheeler, education, all you know, various different kinds of personal loans.
So can I assume that more than 50 will be non-home loan?
Not really giving a split, Vishal.
Okay. And second question I have that basically on 9-month period YOY basis, the share protection has gone up by around 250 bps on your APE. Despite that, margin has not moved because of higher share of Europe. So can you throw some more light to what are the margin levers? Assume that the over next few quarters, what would be the margin levers for us?
Margin levels. Again, not levers. Any guidance going forward. I think anyone who's been tracking us for the last 4 or 5 years will say that it's a kind of a 20-20 or thereabouts game, wherein 20% post overrun margins and 20% return on embedded value is something that we would consistently strive for and hope to deliver.
Okay. And one last question, basically some bookkeeping numbers. On APE basis, can you give me the product mix on total APE basis?
Can we take it offline, Vishal? We can search.
Sure, no problem.
All right.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
The next question is from the line of Sumit Kariwala from Morgan Stanley. Please go ahead.
Hello, am I audible?
Yeah, hi Sumit.
Hi Vibha. So I had a very quick question. So in terms of bancassurance tie-ups, what I was trying to understand is when you get into a tie-up, there'll be a certain period, and I'm trying to ascertain what that is, when you will go to, like, take for example, 50-60% attachment ratio or whatever that number is in terms of business normalize, and then the business grows at normalized rate. So what is that time period? Is it 2 years? Is it 1 year? Is it 3 year before the business growth will stabilize in these bancassurance partnerships?
See, it really depends on a couple of things. One is that whether already the bank has a tie-up with an insurance company and has reached a state of maturity, and we have merely taking over from another insurance manufacturer. As against another bank, which might be completely nascent, and we have to start hand-holding them through the entire process. So it varies. If it is very nascent, then yes, it could take 3 years or thereabouts for it to reach at a fairly optimal level. But if it's someone that we just, you know, shifting from one insurer to another, it could be even 85%. So that's really, so it depends is really the answer to what you're asking.
Yeah, and second very quick one, I know, so on persistency, a good improvement, is there any segment which is driving this? And the other sub-question to that was, there's slight increase in single premium if I look at over the last 2-3 years.
Yeah.
So even adjusted for that, the persistency would have done very well, right?
Yes, it would have. So I think, and frankly, it's not just for us, but also several players in the industry are seeing an improvement in persistency. I think we've, as an industry, come a long way, and we do realize that this is where both from apart from the profitability of the company, but also from a customer grievance point of view, it helps if the policies are sold wherein it meets the customer's needs, and hence the customer has no reason to lapse or surrender their policies. And so, I think we have been. It is a relentless treadmill of really ensuring contactability with the customers. And once we have the contactable details, then convincing the customer is not that difficult. But contactability continues to be a challenge when people move. They don't update, unlike when they update a bank's portal, for example. So we would like to be where Southeast Asia is of 90%+.
And for the first 9 months, is there any a particular product segment that is driving this, or it's broadly?
Yeah, broadly all, it's across the company, not just one. And very frankly, in our prospectus, we had mentioned health as a segment had not done that well, and we're kind of putting a lot of measures to correct it. So, it is a learning curve, constant learning curve for us as far as different product segments and how people react to that, etc.
Perfect. Thanks a lot.
Thank you.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Rohan Advant from Multi-Act. Please go ahead.
Yeah, thanks for the opportunity. I just wanted to check on the sensitivity to embedded value table. I do not see persistency there, so I just was wondering what would be the sensitivity to persistency.
Yeah, so Rohan, I can pull it out, but we, including in our
so
prospectus, we have.
Yeah, so Rohan, if you look at the
slide 26,
yeah. Line number 3, this continuance and partial withdrawal rate, that's talking about that's persistency.
Okay.
Saying this continuance and partial withdrawal rates increase by 10%.
Okay.
So it's 1 minus persistency is different.
Understood. And like you said in one of your earlier comments that you were very conservative on the reference rates, are you seeing a similar, where persistency is trending? Do you feel that whatever is modeled in the experience is actually much better and there can be a significant variance on that account?
We continue to exhibit overall positive operating variance, so a combination of mortality and persistency. I think we'll just like to leave it there when we disclose the results, in the last quarter and for the final year, then we'll get into more details.
Okay, fair point. Thanks so much for taking my question.
Thank you.
Thank you. Next, we have a follow-up question from the line of Rupesh Tatia, who's an individual investor. Please go ahead.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you for the follow-up. So just taking that interest question, right? So you guys have a very significant portion of the protection, or I would say non-linked portfolio. So in that context, asset liability mismatch becomes a meaningful risk, right? Because your insurance is a multi-decade business where you have 20-year policies, 30-year policies, and you're committing to a rate of, let's say, 5%, 6%. But then it's not really possible to find that kind of asset. So how can you just give your thoughts on asset liability mismatch risk?
We can't give our strategy away on the call, but it's sufficient to say that our ALM risk on the non-par savings business is completely hedged. And we have seen in the last, say, 3-4 years, ever since we started writing this business, we've not had any issues in terms of ALM matching with the interest rates going up and down over the last 2-3 years. So all I can tell you here is that we have a fairly strong hedging strategy in place to cover the interest rate risk underlying this business.
And just to reiterate to what Srini just said, the point I made earlier that typically we sell 5-pay non-par savings products, and so we're taking if at all an interest rate risk, which is anyway fully hedged, but only for a period of 5 years and not much longer as is often seen in the industry.
Okay. And then I can slip in just one more. So I was just also looking at the OPEX ratios of, let's say, LIC versus you guys, right? Or other players also. So LIC has a very, very low rate and still they don't have they have absolutely no linked business.
Yes, so on that.
Is there some element of pricing power that LIC has and then the private players don't have?
When you're comparing OPEX ratio, one is LIC has been around for 5 decades more than we have. Second point is that you are looking at OPEX as a percentage of total premium, and total premium LIC is by far the biggest on group and that is also adding to the bottom line. If you strip all of that away and if you try and see what it might be as a percentage of for new business, that's A, not in the public domain, so difficult for us to compare. So just comparing OPEX as a percentage of, you know, all the back book might not be quite the right way to compare.
Okay, okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. That was the last question. I would now like to hand the conference back to Mr. Amitabh Chaudhary for any closing comments.
Rio, thank you so much. Thanks to everyone who joined the call and, you know, all the questions that were put before us. I would encourage any and each one of you who has still has some questions to reach out to us so that we can clarify anything you might not fully understand. We look forward to obviously working with you and continuing to get tough questions as we move forward as a company. I just want to end by saying that we are quite satisfied with the kind of performance we delivered this quarter, and we continue to look at the insurance opportunity as a as huge as we move forward, and we believe we have a great platform to capitalize on it. So look forward to talking to you, if not in the next 3 months, in the next conference call. Thank you.
Thank you very much. On behalf of HDFC Life Insurance, that concludes this conference. Thank you for joining us, ladies and gentlemen. You may now disconnect your lines.